Moses Maimonides, the West's favourite rabbinic worker of iniquity. The rabbinic law codifier and philosopher Moses Maimonides is revered in Judaism and throughout much of the non-Judaic West as a supreme sage of the highest stature. Quote, Moses Maimonides is considered the greatest codifier and philosopher in Jewish history. He is often affectionately referred to as the Rambam, after the initials of his name and title, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon, Rabbi Moses, son of Maimon. Close quote. Maimonides wrote a work so authoritative in Judaism, it is known as the Second Torah. Historian Henry A. Davidson, professor of Hebrew at the University of California at Los Angeles, states that Maimonides was, quote, in a true sense, head of the Jews, not only in Egypt, but throughout the medieval Jewish world, close quote. The Encyclopedia Britannica writes, quote, from Moses unto Moses there arose not one like Moses, close quote, is the verdict of posterity. Maimonides was the great exponent of reason in faith and toleration in theology. Christian Europe owed much to Maimonides. It remains true that in the Christian universities no other master of Judaism was so much esteemed as Rabbi Moses. The New England Puritan leader, Increase Mather, wrote, quote, Maimonides is accounted one of the wisest and soberest writers amongst the Jews. Close quote. Pope John Paul II termed Maimonides the great philosopher and theologian. The English Christian hymn, The God of Abraham Prays, by Thomas Olivers, was said to have been inspired by the 13 principles of Maimonides, as expressed in the 14th century Talmudic poem Yigdal. The first two consonants in the first word in the poem comprise the number 13 in Hebrew. Olivers first heard Yigdal, sung by Meyer Leon, a cantor in London's Great Synagogue. The hymn was published in 1785 by John Wesley in his pocket hymn book and became popular among Methodists. Quote, Maimonides undoubtedly attached significance to what he calls the 13 principles and foundations of our law. He writes that Jews who hold firmly to them belong to the nation of Israel and must be accepted with love and brotherhood, whereas those who do not are heretics, separate themselves from the nation, and must be hated and destroyed. Close quote. David Novak, professor of Jewish studies at the University of Toronto, says, just as Aquinas, who was influenced by Maimonides, treated with respect all great theologians and philosophers, irrespective of religious differences with them, Maimonides did the same with pagans, Christians, and Muslims, saying about them, accept the truth, whatever its source. Maimonides' writings have been presented to the Christian world in so alluringly selective a manner that they even worked their enchantment on John Owen, a leading English Puritan Bible scholar of the 17th century. Owen excoriated Talmudists even as he commended Maimonides. On the oral traditions, Owen wrote, if anyone wishes to look up the word in Uzziel, i.e. the Targum of Rabbi Jonathan ben Uzziel, he will find a story it may be well to relate, simply so that my readers will see what cinders they will find in such romances where they looked for diamonds. My opinion is that for sheer inventions, Muhammad's Quran has only a slight edge over Rabbi ben Uzziel's Pentateuch. We also have no time for the ravings of the Targumists. Maimonides testifies that he only understood the reasons for many of God's laws from a study of the idolatrous worship system of the Sabians. Any reader who is curious enough to desire a deeper knowledge of these matters should first and foremost study Maimonides' works. In truth, according to Maimonides, any Gentile religion is illicit. The only alternatives for Gentiles are conversion to Judaism or observance of the rabbinic Noahide laws, which by definition exclude any Gentile religion. The 15th century Spanish Judaic Talmudist Isaac Abarbanel asserted that God will wipe out the Christians for their transgression of attributing corporeality to God. Abarbanel decreed that Christianity was more wicked than the paganism of savages. According to the introduction to the book, Maimonides' Principles, page 5, Maimonides spent 12 years extracting every decision and law from the Talmud and arranging them all into 14 systematic volumes. The work was completed in 1180 as the Mishneh Torah. In his legal code, Maimonides taught that Christians should, under the proper circumstances, be killed. The proper circumstances are predicated on Maimonides' situation ethics. When Talmudists are dominant over Gentiles, they can be killed, which is the basis of his ruling on when Judaic doctors may refuse to treat Gentile patients, when Judaics are so dominant over Gentiles that the refusal will not result in repercussions by the Gentiles, who would otherwise be too cowed to retaliate in an era of Judaic supremacy. In his Avodah Zarah laws, the Avodat Koshevim, Maimonides issued formal halakot concerning saving the lives of non-Judaics, that Judaics are not to save the life of a non-Judaic under the following conditions. Show no mercy to a non-Jew. If we see a non-Jew being swept away or drowning in the river, we should not help him. If we see that his life is in danger, we should not save him. Next, in the Avodat Koshevim, Rabbi Maimonides, admired by popes and Puritans alike, declares a divine mandate to kill the wicked Jesus Christ, all Jews who follow Jesus and all those who do not follow the Talmud. Quote, "It is a mitzvah, a religious duty, highly pleasing to God, to destroy Jewish traitors, minim and epicorsim, and to cause them to descend to the pit of destruction, since they cause difficulty to the Jews and sway the people away from God, as did Jesus of Nazareth and his students, and Sadoc, Bathos and their students. May the name of the wicked rot." Close quote. The words min and minim have been explained away as denoting idolaters, Achim, wayward heretical Judaics, and many other descriptions. The Shulchan Aruch pinpoints the source of the word to a rabbinic play on a description ascribed to Christians, the faithful. To mock the Christians, the rabbis of the Talmud took to calling them sorts, as in all sorts of malefactors. Min and the plural form minim are therefore primarily references to Christians. Sadoc and Bathos are examples of epicorsim, i.e. opponents of the Talmud. Quote, in his commentary on Avot 1:3, the Rambam writes that Sadoc and Bathos began splinter groups which rejected the core of Jewish practice and coveted material wealth. They found that they could not convince the majority of the people to reject the Torah entirely, so they adopted a different tactic. They claimed that they were true to Torah, but the only Torah that was divine was the written law. The oral law was merely a human invention. This thesis was only a ruse to sway the people from the performance of the mitzvot. Close quote. Furthermore, Maimonides issues an enforceable ruling in the Avodot Koshevim. Quote, it is forbidden to offer medical treatment to a non-Jew, even if offered payment. Close quote. The listener may be aware of the work of contemporary Orthodox Judaic physicians in the treatment of Gentiles. How then do we reconcile the work of the latter with the Talmudic law of the former? The answer is the situation ethics of the rabbis. The law does not change. Gentiles are unworthy of medical care on the basis that no mercy should be shown to them. But the situation in which the law is applied does change. Therefore, Maimonides rules that where Judaic supremacy is not yet completely established, and the Judaic physician may fear the consequences of not treating a Gentile, it is permissible to give medical care to the Gentile for payment, but never for free. For this reason, Maimonides' situation ethics also furnish grounds for plausible denial. By selective quotation from a rabbinic ruling, Judaic believers can tell inquirers that the humane rabbis have decreed that ailing or injured Gentiles must be treated as long as they are reimbursed for their trouble. A far cry from the actual meaning and intent of Maimonides' slippery ruling. This is how persons investigating rabbinic texts are fooled time and time again through a casuistic trickery and camouflage. Rabbi Maimonides relegated Muhammad to the same category of wickedness in which he consigned Jesus Christ. Maimonides declared in his epistle to Yemen that Islam is the cruelest and most implacable enemy that the Jewish people have faced in their entire history. If a Muslim today were to approach a rabbi or follower of Judaism and confront them with these statements, the typical response would be that Maimonides' statements were taken out of context or that they are anti-Semitic fabrications. The rabbi would be likely to tell the Muslim that Maimonides, in the case of the convert Obadiah, evinced his respect for Islam as a monotheistic religion which was not implicated in idol worship. Quote, Maimonides responds that Obadiah was right. Muslims are unquestionably monotheists, and when they bow down to the stone in the Mosque of Mecca, their hearts are directed to heaven, and they do not worship the stone. Just because they lie about us, Maimonides writes, we shall not lie about them and assert that they are idolaters if they are not. Close quote. Wow, what noblesse oblige. This is the Maimonides of establishment legend, a prince of a fellow. People will believe this myth and accept it at face value if they fail to recognize the lawyer's dissimulation beneath Maimonides' statement. Maimonides, as we have seen, has established the legal principle for killing Christians, Talmud skeptics, and traitors. It is a mitzvah to kill a traitor. This philosopher of homicide is now magically transformed by the establishment into an avuncular old soul when it comes to Islam. The fact is, Maimonides was talking for the benefit of Muslim consumption when he wrote to Obadiah, giving the impression he did not think Islam was too bad and feigning fairness. His authentic teaching about Islam, however, the cruelest and most implacable enemy that the Jewish people have faced in their entire history, was reserved for private dissemination among his fellow Judaics, and like so many of his harsh rulings, a command against Islam will only be put into effect in a time when the Jews have control over the Gentiles, as for example in Palestine at this time. In Maimonides' time, his life was forfeit to Islamic rulers in whose jurisdiction he at times resided, so he triggered his Obadiah escape clause, allowing him a huge advantage to move within the highest circles of his detested enemies, including the Sultan's court, posing as a caring physician who treated Muslim patients for remuneration. He was sometimes refused payment, however, even as he laid the groundwork for denying anyone but Judaics the right to own land or homes in Palestine and where no Gentile neighbourhood may be established. As we have seen, rabbinic texts are strewn with escape clauses and loopholes allowing for permissible dissimulation, but other than documenting these as a type of calculated and ingrained treachery that is intrinsic to the religion itself, our eye is not on the public relations hype and smokescreens, but on what Talmudists themselves actually believe inside Judaism and put into practice against persons they judge to be min or apikoros. By rabbinic definition, those who promote the doctrine of sola scriptura and oppose the doctrine and teaching of the Talmud are apikorsus. This is not just some medieval anachronism. One of the most ritually excoriated examples in Judaic annals dates from Poland around the turn of the 19th century and is seared into the collective memory of the rabbis as a notorious outbreak of Epikouros. Quote, many Warsaw Gevirim, prominent affluent Judaics, were Maskilim, anti-Talmudic reformers and assimilationists, especially after 1795, when Warsaw came under Prussian and French occupation. After 1815, when Russia annexed the Duchy of Warsaw, renaming it to the Kingdom of Poland, a Jewish problem had developed, thanks to the skyrocketing growth of the Jewish population. A Polish committee sent a request to the reformer David Friedlander of Berlin, asking his opinion, as a pupil of the enlightened Mendelssohn, how best to handle the problem. Back came Friedlander's reply in an epistle titled Opinion on the Improvement of the Jews in the Kingdom of Poland. He felt that the Jews were hampered by the Talmud, Hasidic Judaics and their Kehillah self-government system. Jews must receive general education, speak Polish and streamline their religion. They should be informed that they would receive in time civil rights if they endeavoured to perfect themselves in the spirit of the regulations issued for them. As part of this reform attempt, a panel with a very interesting name was formed by the government of Poland, comprised of Christian Poles, along with five reform-minded Judaics. It was called the Old Testament Believers. Its name was intended as an obvious challenge to Orthodox Judaism, which at that time was regarded correctly as being a religion of Old Talmud believers. Hence, in the eyes of the Maimonidean rabbis, the crimes of this movement of Epikoursus were compounded. 3 years later, in 1825, the Polish government appointed a committee of Old Testament believers consisting mainly of Polish officials, together with an advisory council of five Jews. Its job was to bring civilization to the Jewish people. A reformed rabbinic seminary was established to create a new breed of Judaic, steeped only in the Old Testament and not the oral traditions. Quote, the position of administrator was handed to Anton Eisenbaum, a distinguished pioneer of Yiddish literature and publishing, a radical assimilator so distant from Yiddishkeit, faithful rabbinic observance, that it was rumoured that his kitchen was not kosher. Then Eisenbaum handpicked a staff to fit in with his aspirations, and the place became a nest of Epikoursus. For example, he trusted the Department of Hebrew and Bible to Abraham Buchner, the notorious author of a German pamphlet titled The Worthlessness of the Talmud, alternate title Der Talmud in seiner Nichtigkeit. Any student entering the institution with a drop of Yiras Shemayim, scrupulous and pious fear of committing the least sin, was almost certain to leave a confirmed secularist, and instead of producing rabbis, the place, which survived for 37 years, churned out heretics. Close quote.
Tune in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
In the uncensored text of the Mishneh Torah, Hilchot Avodat Koshevim 9:4, Maimonides declares that the Christians are idol worshippers and Sunday is their festival. Due to the Catholic expurgation of Judaic texts in the past, the word Canaanite is sometimes substituted for Christian in editions of the Mishneh Torah published during the Renaissance. It is indefensible to claim that Maimonides was referring to Canaanites in Hilchot Avodat Koshevim 9:4 and not Christians, since medieval Judaic editions of Hilchot Avodat Koshevim give the word as Christian. The word Canaanites is a census alteration. What is more, we know that Sunday is the Christian day of worship. The Canaanites had appointed no such day. Furthermore, Maimonides declared in his Sefer HaMitzvot on the extermination of peoples, number 187, that the Canaanites no longer exist. To speak strictly in the uncensored text of Maimonides' Avodah Zarah, Maimonides explicitly describes the Christians as idolaters. of Mishnah Torah, Hilshot Melachim, 11:4. Jesus of Nazareth, who imagined that he was the Messiah and was executed by the court, was also alluded to in Daniel's prophecies. The lawless among your people shall exalt themselves in an attempt to fulfill the vision, but they shall fall. Religious tolerance and ecumenism were not in fashion in Maimonides' day, and he was not favourably disposed towards either Christianity or Islam. Jesus is characterised by him as a renegade who tried to annul the Jewish religion, and he rules in his rabbinic works that there is a religious commandment to kill Jesus of Nazareth and his students. He classifies the Christian religion as a form of idolatry, and he accordingly rules that Christians are subject to all the disabilities placed on idolaters by rabbinical law. As one of the highest legal codifiers in Judaism, Maimonides' equation of Christianity with idolatry reveals just how macabre and ominous are the rabbinic appeals to righteous Gentiles to submit to the seven laws of Noah, or the Noahide laws, particularly in light of the fact that these supposed laws of Noah have nothing to do with the biblical patriarch Noah, who is mocked in the secret law of Judaism as an incompetent drunk who was incapable of fulfilling God's commission and who compounded the sin of Adam. In Judaism's Midrash Rabbah, we read, quote, "Three had a passion for agriculture, and no good was found in them, Cain, Noah, and Uzziah," close quote. The rabbis teach that Noah ended as a castrate. One story has it that he was castrated by a lion while he was drunk and on his way to have intercourse, and this scattered his semen. Alternately, the Midrash says that it was actually Ham who castrated Noah, and that Noah told Ham, "You have prevented me from doing something in the dark, having sex. Therefore your seed will be ugly and dark-skinned." A full-page advertisement in the New York Times of April 7, 2006, sponsored by the racist extremist Chabad Lubavitcher rabbis, advanced the notion that the late Chabad Lubavitcher, Grand Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, was or is the Messiah. After claiming that Schneerson was a scion of the House of David and quoting extensively from Maimonides, the following proclamation was printed at the bottom of the advertisement, "Not just for Jews. The Reb's message extends to all mankind through adherence to the core principles of the seven Noahide laws. These laws include establishment of a system of laws and justice." As we have noted, Schneerson's sect exerts considerable influence over the US federal government. Its leading rabbis have been regular visitors to the White House since the administration of Carter, and the frequency of the visits increased with each subsequent administration, whether Democrat or Republican. Homeland Security Director Michael Chertoff is a close associate. This influence culminated in the enactments by Congress of the obscure Public Law 10214, passed in 1991 by the 102nd Congress, first session, according official recognition of the federal government's legal obligation to return the world to the moral and ethical values contained in the seven Noahide laws. The rabbis allege that when a Gentile resolves to fulfill the seven Noahide laws, his or her soul is elevated, that the adoption of these laws is a means for bridging the Judeo-Christian gap and fulfilling the path of the righteous Gentile. It is claimed that as Noahides, these good Gentiles will not have to follow all the rules of the Talmud of Judaism, only the seven laws of Noah. What they are not told is that in order to faithfully adhere to the so-called seven laws of Noah, the righteous Gentiles are obligated to suffer the prize indignity of submitting to rabbinic interpretations of those laws, which amount to an infinite number of glosses and explications running from here to eternity, a more accurate name for the heavy burdens with which these gullible Gentiles are going to bind themselves would be the 7 billion Noahide laws. The Noahide setup is above all a legal system which will eventually develop courts and a judiciary with the power to impose capital punishment for grievous infringements of the Noahide laws. One death penalty offence under the Noahide rabbinic legal system is idolatry. Since Maimonides has ruled that Christians are idolaters, it is not difficult to see that the 102nd US Congress and the numerous churchmen who promote submission to the Noahide laws, wittingly or unwittingly, have laid the groundwork for the execution at some future date of authentic Christians, individually by trial before a rabbinic judge or en masse. Conversely, Maimonides rules that all Gentiles who are not followers of the Noahide law are liable to death. Hilchot Melchim 8:10 states that any Gentile who does not accept the Noahide laws should be slain, though this only applies when Judaics have, quote, undisputed authority over Eretz Israel, close quote. Maimonides ruled that when a Judaic murders even a righteous Gentile, that is, a Gentile who is a friend and ally of Judaism, the Judaic is not to be harmed. Quote, a Jew who kills a righteous Gentile is not executed in a court of law, as it says, if a man shall act intentional against his fellow, and a Gentile is not considered a fellow, and even more so that he is not executed for killing an unrighteous Gentile. And that comes from Maimonides, Mishnah Torah, Hilchot Rotsiak 2:11. The Judaic Publishing Company's commentary accompanying the preceding teaching of Maimonides states that Jesus was an example of a min, plural minim. The commentary also states that the students of Tzadok were defined as those Jews who deny the truth of the Talmud and who uphold only the written law, i.e. the Old Testament. Maimonides taught in another part of the Mishnah Torah that Gentiles are not human. Quote, man alone, and not vessels, can contract uncleanness by carriage. The corpse of a Gentile, however, does not convey uncleanness by overshadowing. A Gentile does not contract corpse uncleanness, and if a Gentile touches, carries, or overshadows a corpse, he is as one who did not touch it. To what is this like? It is like a beast which touches a corpse or overshadows it, and this applies not to corpse uncleanness only, but to any other kind of uncleanness. Neither Gentiles nor cattle are susceptible to any uncleanness. Close quote. In the legal code of Maimonides, a Gentile who holds public office is considered to be a robber. Quote, when does the statement that a customs collector is considered to be a highwayman apply? When the customs collector is a Gentile, is self-appointed, or was appointed by the king, but is given unlimited jurisdiction and takes whatever he wants and leaves whatever he wants. Close quote. The Ramban's words, which are quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, Chosen Mishpat 3966, imply that even if a Gentile customs collector was appointed by the ruling authorities, he is considered to be a robber, for we assume that he will take more than his due. And that comes from the Magid Mishnah, Rabbi Eliyahu Tuga. In spite of what the documentary record reveals about Rabbi Maimonides, Judaism's formidable public relations machine regularly generates a benign image of him. Here we will reproduce an ecumenical propaganda tale from the Zionist grandees at the New York Times. It is a classic feel-good human interest story dedicated to propagating the myth of the Rambam, The central features of Maimonides' mythology, repeated in this New York Times horse tale. We could allude to another substance produced by horses in this connection, but we will spare you the analogy. The essential features are: 1. Maimonides was a wise and wonderful religious teacher who had love for all, especially the Arabs. 2. Maimonides is an ecumenical bridge to all peoples on the path to peace and understanding. Both propositions are a huge joke on the Gentiles in general, and Muslims and Christians in particular. As every Orthodox rabbi knows, but the Times is keeping secret, Maimonides despised Muslims, reserving his severest rancor for Muhammad himself. Observe how shrewdly this facet of Maimonides' biography is handled in this report in the New York Times. It is never stated in the article that Maimonides liked Muslims or had anything good to say about them. The whole thing is handled from the perspective of the people he fooled, while none of his own statements are cited or assessed. Quote, "He was respected and honoured by both Jews and Arabs. This is especially relevant now in our life and times. He was a very special man who was highly regarded by all people, regardless of faith." Close quote. Correct. The rooks and sycophants among the Goyim love him. But did Maimonides love them in return? The Times article does not say. It cleverly implies that he did, since he is allegedly highly regarded by all people. In truth, Maimonides was a mole, spying on the Muslim religion and closely scrutinizing Arab ethnography. The insights he obtained allowed Judaism to gain an even more firm purchase inside Islam. Until today, the Al-Qaeda Salafist operation, that is, the Western Intelligence Agency's Trojan horse, is a mirror image of rabbinic doctrine on war. Maimonides was one of the most depraved figures in all of history. He applauded the murder of Christ and advocated the murder of Christians. The grief, misery, and slaughter that his teachings have caused are incalculable. His four Judaics-only writings on Muslim and Muhammad are dripping with venom and homicidal hatred. But due to a highly sophisticated and, pardon the pun, well-oiled propaganda machine, Maimonides' benign image is generally taken at face value by a dumbed-down population of Arabs and Christians. Because Thomas Aquinas made favourable remarks about Maimonides' treatise against atheism. Otherwise, Aquinas knew next to nothing about Maimonides' covert doctrines. Maimonides is also occasionally presented as bearing a Catholic imprimatur. As for his supposedly humanitarian medical care, Maimonides taught the clandestine rabbinic principle of indirectly causing the deaths of Gentiles. You see them stuck in a deep hole, you leave them there. Would you want this fellow for your physician if you were a Gentile? According to the Halakha, sound medical care is relative to circumstances, to be extended only to a population of dangerously alert Gentiles who are highly suspicious of Judaics, and then, solely in order to win their favour and overcome their premonitions of Judaic treachery. 800 years later, the legend of Maimonides' medical humanitarianism lives on in Arab society, hence the services he rendered the Sultan's family have paid huge dividends in maintaining prestige for the religion of Judaism in the Middle East, in spite of hostility towards Zionism. In the West, he is viewed through an intellectual prism as a philosopher in the same exalted league as a genius on par with Einstein, and as an Old Testament ethicist who tried to put the brakes on the Kabbalah. Actually, he only curbed its excesses for the sake of not wanting to blow Judaism's biblical cover, while reaffirming the core of the goddess-worshipping cultus which is intrinsic to Orthodox Judaism. Maimonides wished the deaths of all faithful Christians and Muslims. Yet in our upside-down Zionist world, he is presented to the public as a sage of the ages, as a bridge between Judaism and Christianity, as a paragon of virtue, when in reality he is just another lying, cheating Jewish rabbi.